السلام علیکم ورحمۃ اللہ وبرکاتہ. جی سر, وی کنٹینیوئنگ ود دا بایوگرافی آف سیدنا عمر رضی اللہ عنہ, اینڈ وی موو آن ناؤ ٹو دا بیٹل آف سبقتیہ ایٹ قصکر. سو آفٹر دس, میننگ آفٹر دا پریویس بیٹل, ابو عبید روڈ ان پرسوٹ آف دا ریمننس آف دا پرشین آرمی. دوز ہو سروائیو, سو دے ویئر ٹرائنگ ٹو فلی, سو ابو عبید پرسوڈ دیم. So they had taken refuge in a place called Qaskar. This is a city between Basra and Kufa. The city belonged to Narsi. Narsi was Khosrow's cousin, his mother's sister's son. Khosrow's maternal, aunt's son. So Narsi replenished their supplies for fighting Abu Ubaid once again, and the two armies faced off at Sabqatiyah. Right? Abu Ubaid prevailed, that means Allah Ta'ala gave him victory, and he obtained numerous spoils from the vanquished Persians. Lot of spoils of war, weapons, etc., and lot of foodstuff also was obtained. Narsi fled the battlefield, and the Muslims overpowered his soldiers and captured his land. They also took possession of his abundant treasures. But the most pleasing spoils of war they laid their hands on were the date palms, khajur palms, called Nirsiyan, which produced the best type of khajurs in that region. Narsi used to personally protect these trees, whose fruit was exclusively reserved for royalty. Only the royal family used to eat those khajurs. The Muslims divided the fruit among themselves and started feeding it to the farmers. So they sent 5 of these to the Khalif, Umar radiallahu anhu, and they wrote to him, "Indeed, Allah Ta'ala has blessed us with a food which the Persian kings used to protect, and they used to use it exclusively. We would like for you to see it so that you may remember Allah Ta'ala's grace and bounties." The story shows the kind of high moral character that the Muslims possessed, which they exhibited by elevating the status of the deprived farmers. Those farmers were not allowed to eat this, the khajurs from these trees. But the Muslims took it and they started feeding all the farmers. They gave them to eat. The Muslims fed them, right? So this was forbidden for them, but the Muslims fed them. So this noble act carried the message that come to this great deen, which elevates your status and restores your human dignity. Because in Islam, we don't have this thing. Only royalty can do this, only that one, you know. Islam is a religion that is equal for all. Yeah, what the Saudi Arab kings and the Arab countries, the kings and all, what they doing, that's not Islam. Islam is a religion of peace, of justice for everybody. Abu Ubaid himself stayed at Qaskar while sending troops to pursue. He sent other troops now in pursuit of the fleeing Persians, right? And also he sent different people to the neighboring towns, right? The balance of power in the region now tilted in favor of the Muslims. After this conquest, some local governors came forward to offer truce. They said, "No, we don't want to fight. Right? We are prepared to enter into a truce with you." Some of them presented their choicest foods to Abu Ubaid, all the delicacies they presented to him, saying, "This is something by which we wish to honor you and cool your heart." He replied, "Did you honor my soldiers and cool their hearts as well? In other words, you're only bringing all these delicacies for me. What about my troops?" They said, "It is not easy to prepare so much now for all your troops, but we will do it." Abu Ubaid said, "Then we do not desire anything which is not available for our troops. We eat the same food, Our troops eat the same thing, we eat the same thing. It's not now we eat special and the troops are just given anything. We eat the same food. The delegates were overawed and feared for themselves. Abu Ubaid continued, "Did I not tell you that I will not partake except from that which is also available to those with me who attacked you?" The delegates finally said, "Now no one is left except that he was provided to his full in his camp with food like this or better than this." Upon learning this, Abu Ubaid then accepted their gift and he ate from it. He sent for his guests who used to eat with him and invited him to share the meal with him. However, these guests had they were already fed. Because then he said everybody must get food. So they fed everybody. Gee, so when Abu Ubaid called for them to come eat with him, now these people were thinking, they didn't know that these Persians brought all this heavy delicacies, right? So they thinking in their mind now that Abu Ubaid, he normally eats such a simple meal. Now if we're going to go there to eat with him, he's going to give us a simple meal again. So they sent a message to say, "No, don't worry, we already ate, the farmers have fed us." So this is how this humble and noble commander finally ate his meal after being assured that all his troops had been fed similar meals or better meals. He rejected the invitation to sumptuous dinner twice and only accepted it on the third invitation after his condition was met, that all my troops must get the same food. Despite this, he didn't eat alone. He still called other people to come and join him. Gee, so that was that battle. Then the next battle is the battle of Barosma. Barosma, which took place in 13 Hijri. Right? So after this, the armies confronted each other at Barosma between Kaskar and Sakkatiya. The Persians were led by Narsi, right, on the right flank, and his cousins Bandviya and Berviya. These were his cousins, right? They were on the left flank. Rustam had prepared an army and placed them under the command of Jalinus. Right? When Abu Ubaid got wind of this development, he hurried to fight Narsi before the arrival of the reinforcements. Right, before Jalinus now comes here and joins the army, he said he rather defeat Narsi. So a fierce battle took place in which the Persians were defeated, and once again Narsi ran away. Like last time also he ran away, this time also he ran away. Abu Ubaid sent Musanna bin Harisa and others to the neighboring areas which were conquered, either by force or through negotiations and truce. Right? So those areas were also conquered. So the Muslims levied upon them the jizya. Like a Muslim, if you are a believer, then you pay zakat. You are a disbeliever living in Muslim lands, then you pay jizya. Right? Jalinus eventually came now, right? He came to the aid of Jabban's army, who was also defeated. And the Muslims captured his army and his wealth also. Jalinus himself fled in fear. Right? He too ran away, Jalinus. Thus, three Persian armies were defeated in a short time. Now, as remember, these Persian armies, these were now the superpowers of the world at that time. So defeating them was not an ordinary thing. You know, you defeated the Persian, it's like in today's time, boy, see that box is wet, it's going to wet the carpet. Pick that box up. It put it on the top. Ji, jazakallah. Ji, so by defeating them, it's like in today's times, if somebody says now they defeated America, you know, they defeated UK, they defeat, like they were the superpowers at that time. The Persians did have the opportunity to unite these forces to encircle the Muslims and battle them from all four directions due to their numerical superiority. The Persians were more in number. However, Allah Ta'ala dimmed their insight in that each of their commanders wished that the other commander will accomplish the mission. Why must I put my life in danger? The other commander will go do the job. Right? So each one wanted the other commander to go and fight the Muslims and weaken them to the extent that he would be able to come to his colleague's aid. If they only joined forces and they attacked the Muslims from all sides, the Muslims wouldn't have stood a chance. Right? But Allah Ta'ala didn't give them that courage to think like that. Okay? Gee. The Muslims benefited greatly from their agility and speed of movement on the one hand, and the laziness of the enemy on the other hand. Gee. The next battle was the battle, is known as the Battle of the Bridge. This also took place in 13 Hijri. When Jalinus reached his people after having fled the Muslim forces, he found the Persians goading each other to fight back in revenge. Right? The Muslims all are saying, no, we need to make a stand. We need to fight back. So they went to Rustam to tell him, no, we need a force, fight back. So Rustam gave them a great army under the command of Bahman Jazviya, a renowned Persian commander. Rustam granted him the Khosrow's own standard, the banner, the flag of the Khosrow. So this banner, in its this word, this Persian word, Dirafish e Kaviyani, it means the great banner. So this was given to him. The Persians used to think that this banner brought good luck. It was made of tiger skin, and it was 8 cubits wide, 12 cubits long. It's a huge banner. They caught up with the Muslims at a place such that the two armies were separated by the Euphrates River. Right? There's a bridge across the river. One army is on that side, one army is on this side. They sent a message to the Muslims, will you come across to us or must we come across the bridge? You are going to come this side or we must come that side. The troops advised their commander, Abu Ubaid, to ask them to cross the bridge. Tell the Muslims to cross the bridge. So he said, they are not as dauntless in the face of death as we are. In other words, the Muslims, if you have to tell them to come, they will come. They are not frightened for death. Saying this, he went across the river with his army. Once across, the Muslim forces found themselves in a very restricted terrain with a narrow exit. A fierce and gory battle ensued, the likes of which had not been known. The Muslims were about 10,000. The Persians had brought with themselves a contingent of numerous elephants. Right? Now in today's times you'll say you got Merkava tanks. You know, those days that was the tank, now the elephant. So they brought elephants which had small bells tied to them. Now why they want the bells? To scare the horses. You see, horses, they get scared for loud sounds. Right? Whenever the Muslim cavalry tried to attack, their horses would flee back due to the fright they got from the elephants and the eerie sound of the bells. Only a handful of expert horsemen were able to rein in their horses to maintain their positions. The Muslims were not able to make their cavalry advance towards the elephant squadron. While the Persians kept spraying them with arrows that resulted in a number of casualties. The Muslims were able to kill 6,000 of the enemy troops. Even though they were able to attack their elephants, the beasts ran amok among the Muslim ranks, leaving havoc in their wake. How are you going to fight against elephants now? Seeing this, Abu Ubaid and his troops dismounted. Because the horses are not going forward, so they dismounted. And they went forward as infantry now, walking with their swords in their hands. Now, the Muslims had lost their horses, and it was just infantry, only foot soldiers, facing a variety of cavalry, elephant-mounted troops, and infantry. Not to mention the archers, you know, those with the bow and arrows, who had inflicted a great deal of damage to the Muslim army. The Muslim cavalry had tried to ride towards the archers, but the ceaseless barrage of arrows kept the horses at bay. Hence it was a very difficult situation in which the Muslims exhibited great courage and sacrifice, the like of which is hard to find in the annals of history. They remained steadfast in the face of an enemy who enjoyed material supremacy in all aspects of the war. However, it was the elephants that were the strongest weapon that the Muslims had to cope with, and these elephants wreaked havoc among the Muslim ranks. Abu Ubaid called out to them to concentrate on the elephants. Right? What he said, cut their girths. You know what is a girth? When you put a saddle on an animal, so you need the saddle to stay there. So you have a belt that goes from one side of the saddle under the stomach of the animal and comes to the other side of the saddle. That's called a girth. Right? So he told the Muslim army that, see, get to the elephants and cut the girths. So now, the riders of the elephant, they can't sit on the saddles now. The saddle will fall. Once you cut the girth, the saddle will fall. So he said, cut the girths to make the troops on top of them fall to the ground. Leading by example, he himself began with the white elephant and hung on to its girth. Finally, he managed to cut it, and the saddle along with its occupants came crashing to the ground. Now imagine what bravery you must have to go like that for an elephant. The Muslims followed suit and did not leave a single animal except that they had brought down its saddle and killed the troops mounted on them. However, the elephants continued to attack the Muslims since they had been trained. These were elephants that were trained in warfare. Abu Ubaid now wished to get rid of the elephants. So he asked the troops, what is the best way to kill these elephants? He was told that if the lips of an elephant, now the lip of the elephant is where? Under the trunk. So he said, if the lip of the elephant is cut, it would die. The elephant would die. But how are you going to get to the lip? Again, Abu Ubaid took the lead and attacked the white elephant's trunk with his sword. However, the elephant protected itself with its forelegs by pushing Abu Ubaid to the ground and then trampling on him with its hind legs. With Abu Ubaid's demise, this is how Abu Ubaid became shaheed. With Abu Ubaid's demise, the banner was taken up by his brother, Hakam bin Mas'ud. He too attacked the animal ferociously and managed to push it off Abu Ubaid. However, he too met the fate of his brother and was trampled to death by the elephant. Now the banner was passed on to the successive men whom Abu Ubaid had already named. These included his three sons, Malik, Wahab, and Jabbar. All of them were killed on the battlefield until near the end of daylight. Now you see this, look at the Muslim army. When it came to dangerous situations, they didn't protect their family members. They put the other people there, let them go. No, they put their own family in the face of danger. They put their own family. So he put his brother, he put his sons, all became shaheed. Now, Musanna bin Harisa, he became the commander now. By this time, some Muslims had already started evacuating the battlefield and going across to the other side of the river. As the withdrawal was steadily progressing, Abdullah bin Marsad Saqafi took notice of it. So what he did, he went and he cut the bridge. The ropes holding the bridge, he cut that thing. And he said, you either be victorious or you die like your commanders died. He said, either we are victorious or we get shahadat. There's no running away. He tried to stop the troops from crossing back, but they brought him to Musanna. The new commander grew so furious when he learnt of this development that he struck Abdullah and asked, what made you do this? He replied, to make them fight. However, this was a wrong judgment on the part of Abdullah, since the unfastening of the bridge caused some of the Muslims to fall into the river and drown. They were unable to wade back. Right? The appropriate plan for the Muslims would have been to protect their remaining strength by going across the bridge if it was possible. The better thing was to go across, you know, have a break, regroup yourself, and then make another attack. And this is what Musanna finally did. He ordered that the bridge must be refastened. He, along with a company of other knights, remained behind to ensure a safe retreat. By protecting the evacuating forces from the rear, he told them, men are behind you, do not panic. Right? Do not panic, because if you panic, you'll drown. Don't panic. Cross at your ease, take your time. We are standing here, we are protecting you. You go. We will not cross until we see you on the other bank. When you have gone over, then only we will cross. Musanna, Asim bin Amr, Kalj bin Rabbi, and other heroes who remained with him were the last to evacuate the battlefield. The Persian commander, Bahman Jazviya, tried his best to eliminate the remaining Muslims, but he lost the opportunity when Musanna personally supervised the organized retreat. There is no doubt that this small company of Muslims who covered the rear of the retreating troops until the completion of the evacuation rendered an almost superhuman feat by remaining steadfast in the face of the enemy. 5,000 Muslims were evacuated across the bridge. 4,000 martyrs were left behind. Isn't there were 10,000 in total? 4,000 were left behind. The martyrs included many of the Sahaba radiallahu anhum who had come to Iraq with Abu Ubaid from Medina Munawara. 2,000 of the evacuees returned to Medina Munawara and other cities. So now, Musanna only had 3,000 men in his command. However, despite the heavy odds, the Muslims were able to slay 6,000 Persian troops. This bears witness to the Muslim courage and strength, even in the face of the most unfavorable conditions. So, Musanna remained in Iraq with a small army that was not even adequate to protect the states which the Muslims had conquered. In fact, the Persians had the opportunity to chase the surviving Muslim battalion right out of Iraq. By this enterprise, they could also test the loyalty of their Arab subjects by seeing which tribes chased the Muslims in the desert. However, Allah the Almighty supported this band of believers, just as He helps sincere Muslims who are beset with a crucial impasse with the means to extricate themselves from it. Allah Ta'ala destined something to happen which prevented the Persians from attacking the Muslims. They became divided into two parties. One party became loyal to Rustam and the other to Feyrazan. When the news reached the Persian commander, Bahman Jazviya, he hurried back to Madain, since he was used to being consulted in political affairs. So this is how Allah Ta'ala prevented the war from being imposed on these few Muslims who were left. Otherwise, he could have come back and finished. But Allah Ta'ala created a political turmoil there. Bahman Jazviya ran back to sort those things out. So the Muslims gained enough time to recuperate, gain strength by reinforcements from the Muslim capital, so that at the end of the day, the Muslim army again swelled in numbers. So Musanna sent Abdullah bin Zayd al-Ansari with the news of the battle to Umar radiallahu anhu. Explain to him what happened. He reached the Khalif. Umar radiallahu anhu was sitting on the minbar at the time. So he asked, "What do you bring, O Abdullah bin Zayd?" He replied, "News, O Amirul Mu'mineen." And he drew closer to relay the developments in secret. Tell Umar now in secret what transpired. When Umar radiallahu anhu learnt that Abdullah had himself been present at the battle, so he knew now that this is authentic, right? Everything that's being said is authentic. Umar radiallahu anhu and the other companions of Nabi Kareem sallallahu alayhi wasallam present at the occasion were touched upon hearing the calamities which had befallen the Muslim legion in this battle. He said, "O Allah, every Muslim is free of me. I am the reserve troop of every Muslim. Whoever faces the enemy in battle and his situation becomes unbearable, then I am his reserve troop. May Allah have mercy on Abu Ubaid. Had he retreated to me, I would have been his reserve troop." This reaction shows that despite being unwavering and strong-willed, he used to be moved and grieved. Umar Lan, normally he was very, very, you know, strong-willed and jalani. But when in situations like this, he used to be moved and grieved. In situations demanding mercy, emotions, then he would show that emotion also. Some people think that, you know, you must just be hard all the time. No, that's not a balanced person. There are times to be firm, there are times to be merciful, there are times to show strength, there's times to show emotion. So Umar radiallahu anhu was a very balanced person. Right? So the news now came to Umar radiallahu anhu. And obviously now Amirul Mu'mineen needs to take some decisions. What are we going to do in this situation? So inshallah, we'll continue with this. Allah Ta'ala give us tawfiq. Subhanallah wa bihamdihi. Subhanakallahumma wa bihamdik. Nashhadu an la ilaha illa anta. Nastaghfiruka wa natubu ilayh. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.